such sights to show you.
Like how heroic are your kittens or your cats? So would they like travel through?
Absolutely. This is, although I will say, I don't think they're as smart as this cat, because this cat.
But there are two of them.
It's, yeah, they're combined brain cells. I think they might be able. But this cat, like, cross state lines. This cat was like hitchhiking. This cat had like a knapsack over its shoulder.
He did the hobo thing. He did. He definitely did.
This cat is a badass.
It's a drifter cat, dude. He's a drifter cat. Yeah,
like. This cat did some shit to survive that you don't want to know.
You're like, my cat is done by the time it gets to Santa Ana.
Yeah, it's just, my cat screams every time I have, like, Britannia in particular, every time I have to take her to the vet, she screams for the 2-second drive because she doesn't like being in a car.
Oh, no.
My cat is a fucking princess. The only time she would defend me against intruders is because they're just like, she would just be like, this is not your house. I do not know you. Like, get the fuck out of here.
Oh, okay. Well,
she would go Bobby Hill. Like,
I don't know you.
That's not your purse. I don't know you.
Okay, get the Bobby Hill cat. That's good. This is like the Rambo cat, for sure.
Oh, for sure. Of course.
Well, I mean, now that we're talking about it, shall we?
Let's go ahead and get started. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes.
Mm-hmm. What Hello. Is up? Meow. That was the worst meow. Yeah, that was pretty bad.
Meow.
that was bad too. It gets worse. It's just getting worse.
I know.
You guys can't see her face. It's fucking horrible.
It's because I'm terrified. No man over 30 should meow ever.
Oh, Jesus. I do it all the time.
Do you? What?
In the mirror when I wake up.
Like, oh, of course.
Yeah, it's part of your... Not that you wake up. No,
the best part 2021, of please. Waking up.
Folgers sucks.
Oh, yeah, it sucks.
It's the worst.
It sucks.
If you have Folgers, I'm not going to be your friend.
No, the Folgers, like, that makes me think of that jingle and the very weird Christmas incest commercial from, the early 2000s.
Okay, see, wait, what commercial? I don't remember the commercial.
Oh, my God.
No.
Hold on.
No, please.
No. It's not, like, graphic. It's not, like, weird stepdaughter. Like, hold on.
Well, now I'm not excited anymore.
Hold on.
Slap it up. Fuck it.
Folgers. Yeah, the first thing that pops up. Folgers. Brother and sister commercial.
No, come on. Let me see it. What is it?
It's 2009.
2009?
Yeah.
Hold on. Okay, it's fading in.
No.
West Africa. Real coffee. Okay, whoa. What? Why are they waking up against each other? What?
What?
No. That is some glaring.
Let me see.
Hold on.
I want to make sure I'm not actually showing you porn. Okay, yeah, this is it.
This is it. Don't touch. What?
What are you doing?
You're my present this year.
Oh, Jesus. It's like.
Waking up.
Oh, no. Yeah, let me go get a snack for my snack. I can't, that is horrible.
Oh, yeah. This is the 2009. Like,
that's 2009?
Yeah, buddy. Oh, my God. Yeah.
I'm keeping that whole thing in. That's staying in, this whole thing. Okay, let's talk about this. That's
the true horror story here.
Oh, Jesus.
For those of you listening at home, sorry for listening to me, for you having to listen to me giggle uncontrollably for a minute and a half. The commercial that I just showed Anthony is a commercial from 2009. Mm-hmm. And it's like a brother-sister thing, and it is weirdly incestuous.
They wake up directly next to each other with the sun glaring on their faces.
It's weird. Yeah.
It's like the presence. I thought she was going to kiss him on the fucking nose. Oh, Jesus.
The best part of waking up. So, yeah, every time I sing that little jingle, I think of disgusting coffee and that hilarious fucking commercial, because the internet tore it to shreds. Jesus. And rightfully so.
What the hell was I missing? Okay, well,
I mean, we're on different sides of the internet.
Okay.
Anyway, guys. Man.
Well, it's about to get weird again.
Yeah, we're talking about Cat's Eye from 1985. Yeah,
that's right. This is a Stephen King prime cocaine Steve movie, and I think you can kind of tell a little bit.
Oh, what? I think the Wall Troll is really...
Yeah, the least of it, yeah. Maybe the borderline anthropomorphic cat. Doing things that, like, cats just don't do.
The animal trainer on this deserved $1 million.
Oh, we're going to talk about just how they executed that for a little bit, because it's not a whole lot in the production. I managed to find enough, really, but we're going to break these stories down. So this is one of those wonderful, you guys get it at the very beginning of the season, good old Horrible People's Anthology episode.
Woo!
It is a very strangely strung together anthology, but I gotta say.
For fans of Trilogy of Terror, first off, go listen to that episode, because, mm-hmm. man oh man.
Yeah.
Was that just a good time? very similar.
Yeah, pretty similar, actually, I would say, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. What is IMDb have to say about good old Cat's Eye? And then before we start, actually, this episode is going out to my roommate Christian Mayola, who suggested this for 2 years.
And we never covered
we
it?
We didn't cover it because
you didn't tell me about it until, like, just now.
I had forgotten about it many times. But, he suggested it. He's going through some recovery from Max right now. So, Christian, I wish you a very, very well recovery.
And
I'm there to witness it, so, you know, hopefully it's good by the time this comes out. But
yeah, this is coming out in the end of September.
Yeah, near the end.
This is actually coming out the week that we're going to Halloween Horror Nights.
Oh, shit. Well, that's going to be a lot of fun. Hear more about that in October sometime.
I think I just lied. Did I lie? No, next week.
Damn. All right.
I'm a liar.
Well,
sorry.
That's okay. We're getting there. Horror Nights is coming up. Yay!
Dude, I'm so excited.
I know. It's going to be awesome.
So fucking stoked.
They should do a Cat's Eye Maze. Oh, that'd be horrible.
You
just get your feet electrocuted.
You walk into, like, a fucking, like, static cage.
Yeah.
Your hair just suddenly starts standing on end. No, thank you.
Right, and honestly...
And then someone, like, you just get gang stalked.
Yeah, and don't be a smoker going into it. It's just not gonna be good.
Yeah.
It's not gonna be good.
Oh, God. So, IMDb...
Yeah. Yeah, what do they gotta say?
They are succinct in this one. A stray cat is the linking element of three tales of suspense and horror.
Oh, that is very brief, okay.
I mean, that's it. That's the movie.
That's pretty much it. Yeah.
This bad boy was written by Stephen King and was directed by Lewis Teague.
That's Lewis Teague, yes. He's directed a lot of monster movies back in the day, actually.
Sorry.
Yeah. And who's starring? Who's one of the
So a little known actress, you might have heard of her. Her name's Drew Barrymore.
Mm. Who?
I'm just kidding. Drew Barrymore is the love of my life. So.
Oh yeah. And this is a post ET fame too. So this is like when she's like the Hollywood like child actor to go to for
gotcha.
Sure.
I've never seen ET. So.
Oh really?
No.
Yeah. No. She got pretty big.
The little
big.
Shithead looked like it was too family friendly. I was like at that point.
I grew up on ET.
Right, just, but by the time like I really had any interest in ET, I was like watching like Signs. You know what I mean?
I was like, give me Fire in the Sky. Give me the whole.
Yeah.
Shit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like I was just like. I'm like, this is... E.T. wouldn't have been nice.
And Kid Me is, like, just with that John Williams score, like... like, go home, man!
Go home!
Go home!
You can do it!
Oh, no, Elliot!
So many people keep asking me this, but it like, why I don't like comedies, or why, like, I really like horror movies.
Yeah.
I've always been like this, man. I don't know.
You're like, you know what? Just joy is in my heart.
Joy is in my heart. Did you see how hard I was laughing at that comedy show?
That's true. That's a good point. Taylor Tomlinson fucking killed.
Yeah.
Oh, great time. Great time.
Although, I must say, Anthony, like, just the king of subtlety. Anytime she made a joke that even remotely related to my life and my various traumas, he would lean over and be like, hey, it's you. And I'm like, thank you.
If anything, I related more to the other opener before that, who was like the guy in his
30s. Uh-huh.
Oh, interesting times. We'll be doing a lot of comedy shows.
Comedy shows are great. Like, I love comedy. I love laughing.
Mm-hmm.
But horror movies also just make me laugh.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of absurdity in there, for sure.
Anyway, so aside from Drew Barrymore, little known actress, it also is starring a returner.
Oh, that's
from
right.
From Horror from the Horrible People's podcast, James Woods.
That's Mr. fucking Hades himself right there.
Yeah. Also, listen to our Videodrome episode, because that was the first thing I really ever saw him in. Like, saw him, of course, mm-hmm. Hades, duh.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the whole time I was just like, show me the chest vagina.
Don't you do that every fucking movie you watch, though?
Yeah.
No, I agree. Same here.
Don't you? Yeah. Shouldn't everyone? Anyway, Alan King, Kenneth McMillan, Robert Hayes, and Candy Clark.
Those are names. Let's go.
Yeah. The first two, really. All of note. The budget for this movie, $7 million for 1985. I'm not sure if that's good, bad, mediocre.
Yeah, it seems okay. She's about right, honestly. Yeah, for kind of what we're getting here. Yeah. Makes sense.
And then it made, $13 million.
That's right. Little under double of its budget, which was considered pretty okay at the time. So
nice.
Yeah, and then when did it come out?
Oh, April 12th, 1985.
Damn. Mid-80s right there.
Yeah, right smack dab in the middle.
Right there. Yeah. So this follows the tradition of our wonderful anthology episodes that we've gone through. We've gone through a couple. We didn't quite get to do a play-by-play breakdown with something like the Twilight Zone movie, which was focused around a tragedy.
Oh my god, was that our last
anthology? No, that was one of our first ones. And also, before we start, remember guys, we do have a Patreon.
We'll talk about it at the end.
Okay, cool. There you go. Anyways, so
we've come too far.
we got to get to the episode. So, like always, we're going to give you a little bit of history before we break down these wonderful, wonderful stories. So, to understand this strange, really 80s anthology film with a screenplay by, you know, the King, first name Steven, we have to go back to the 70s. Oh, yeah. That's right.
Going back Cokehead to the
70s.
Steve.
Yeah, Cokehead Steve. He was Family Man Steve for a little bit in the 70s, and then he became Cokehead Steve. It was a pretty... Yeah, remember, see our Carrie episode for that one.
No.
I love that one.
I love it, but we still get corrections.
That's... Oh, shit, don't even listen to it. Anyways, that's right.
Just don't do it.
Cat's Eyes origins can be traced back to an era we're very familiar with. In this podcast, of course, hot off the heels of the author's famous novel, The Shining, and Brian De Palma's film adaptation of the novel that got him famous, Carrie. Pretty big time for Steve.
Wow, both films we've covered.
Mm-hmm, both films we've covered. Very, very profound episodes. So how does King follow up two sprawling landmark novels in horror literature? Well, how about a book of short stories just kind of slapped together? Night Shift became King's fifth published book, and developed quite the fandom due to how great these bite-sized stories actually were. So good, in fact, that student filmmakers everywhere were flooding his office with requests to adapt the short stories into short films. Because of this demand, and his desire to actually help young creatives, because he was a hungry creative himself for many years, King developed the Dollar Deal, in which the film rights to his short stories can be purchased for $1. Allowing students the chance to avoid having to hire a screenwriter and opening up a lot of their own budgets. So that started with Night Shift, actually.
Oh, that's cool.
Right?
I think that's neat.
Right? Pretty early. So one person who was actually not a student filmmaker, but still wanted a piece of that King cannoli was well-known producer and ravioli connoisseur Dino De Laurentiis.
You proud of yourself?
I am. That was one of the more elaborate ones.
I'm surprised you said that in one take, considering how much you were fucking up...
the exact line right before?
Cat's Eyes Origins.
That was a tough one.
But King Cannoli and ravioli connoisseur Dino De Laurentiis.
When it comes to doing Italian stereotypes for Dino De Laurentiis, that I just kind of pump him out. That's just how it works. See many of our episodes because he's quite influential in 80s and 90s horror cinema.
Yeah, also yeah. Anthony's personal, like, Italian racist, pet project.
Just keep trying to one-up myself there. So, the producer had worked on a previous King adaptation, Firestarter, and commissioned the author to adapt some of the very short stories he wrote himself. Alex, I see there's a typo. Don't even let's acknowledge that. Using actress Drew Barrymore as the lead. Very short stories he writes himself. Because he write good.
He write English good.
Yep. This is because the young actress did such a fantastic job on Firestarter. I'm just mispronouncing things today.
What the fuck, Anthony?
This is because the young actress...
We're never recording late again.
I know, we're losing it. She did a pretty goddamn good job on Firestarter, according to the staff that worked on that particular film. Cat's Eye was set to feature short story adaptations. The first being Quitter's Ink. The second being The Ledge, originally published in, of course, a 1976 issue of Penthouse magazine.
No shit.
Yeah. And the third called Sometimes They Come Back. The last story in that batch was actually so good that the producers felt it would be its own film, actually. It deserved one. So they threw something together with the cat and a troll at the end, resulting in a completely original story called The General. Which tied the whole narrative together, actually.
Interesting.
Yeah, that is a Stephen King original right there.
What?
Uh-huh.
Prime Cokehead Steve.
Prime
too.
Cokehead Steve. He's just like, okay, yeah.
He's just like, put a troll in the fucking wall.
We'll get into it for sure. Some of the other movies that came from Night Shift, actually, were The Lawnmower Man, The Mangler, Maximum Overdrive, Prime Cocaine Steve in that one. If we ever cover it one day, it is going to be some shit, trust me.
Oh, I cannot wait. Oh, I would love to cover Maximum, Overdrive.
Well, talk about a fucking production. And of course, Children of the Corn was probably the biggest one to come from that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So very, very influential, novel or mm-hmm. group of short stories. And direct follow-up to, obviously, some of his biggest properties of all time.
Definitely.
Yeah. Now... what happened next? They got all together.
Of course, as the ardent cat mom of the duo, you're listening before you. I have to take over this one. So, Cat Eye's biggest star is obviously the general. The persistent feline that ties the whole film together. 12 different cats were utilized to portray the general, all paid in treats that were rewarded after a successful performance on camera. They trained the fuck out of these cats.
Yeah, this performance is fucking insane, honestly. Like, all of them really pulled their goddamn weight on this one.
Yeah. The general's nemesis, the troll, was voiced by the legendary Frank Welker, who you may know from 70s and 80s animated classics like Scooby-Doo and Transformers, among a shit ton of other things.
His filmography is way too big for me to include in this. Yes. Like, it's gigantic, but, you know.
Yes. Something else that I loved about this movie, Every Breath You Take by the Police is also utilized throughout the film, and by that, we definitely mean a much cheaper cover that was used, as the original song was way too expensive and it deeply cut into De Laurentiis's lasagna budget.
Yeah, I had to get one in for you to read off. I had to. Yeah.
Anthony wrote this this episode. Anyway, fuck you, dude.
You're right. Lasagna was part of craft services, so it's fine. Yeah, it worked out.
It was all part of the actual. Yeah. Whatever. God. So there isn't much in the way of production details on this one, but it is notable that this was actually the first King adaptation to get a PG-13 rating, and the trailer for the film notably lied to audiences, claiming to be King's first screenplay adaptation. That honor definitely does go to 1982's Creepshow, which we will definitely get. It'll get its own episode at one point.
Oh, I really want to cover that. Especially after seeing this, I'm like, oh, Creepshow has to be at least...
Creepshow is one of my favorites.
Oh, it's coming this season.
I love Creepshow.
I want to put that this season.
It was also a fantastic maze at Halloween Horror Night 2019.
Such a good maze. That was a goddamn good maze.
That was a good one.
Oh, yeah. I loved it.
So, the prologue was also cut just before the release of the film, something King was not a fan of, as it explained the general's motivation to the audience.
Yeah, and I cannot find what actually happened in this prologue. Like, it's not really known.
I mean, it's really, we just get, like, a quick second of, like, the general just being a little alley cat, little tomcat.
Yeah, little tomcat, living his tomcat life, right?
Yeah. Living his best little cat life. Okay, so, what's this director's name?
Lewis Teague.
Teague, okay.
Yeah.
Director Lewis Teague's Cat Eye could be considered by most metrics to be a moderate success. Mm-hmm. Like Anthony said before, almost doubling its budget by grossing $13 million at the box office. So, you know, it did its best. Yeah, which is, good. I mean, this is better than some of the numbers that I saw, which made it look like it lost money.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, I think from all the reports that I was looking at, people were like, eh, pretty good. Like, that's the general consensus, pretty much.
Eh, not bad. So, critics, however, were all over the place, with some considering it the best King adaptation yet, like...
To that point, yeah.
Okay, sure. Like, Neil Gaiman, not to be confused with... What's his face? The other Neil Gaiman.
Is there another Neil Gaiman?
Yeah, the guy who wrote American Gods.
This is new. I don't know who that is.
Hold on.
American Gods is not a thing to me.
Hold on. I need to make sure I'm not...
the same guy.
No, it's spelt Neil Gaiman, N-E-I-L-G-A-I-M-A-N.
Oh, shit. That is like a letter away?
Exactly. That's why I was just like, wow, that is like, yeah.
Okay.
So I was not... I'm not that fucked up.
No, this is Game On.
Yeah.
Neil Game On.
Of Imagine Magazine. Well, Washington Post compared it unfavorably to McDonald's, which I don't know how you could do that.
Mm-hmm. They essentially says, like, you know what you're getting, pretty basic. Like, that was Washington Post.
Okay, yeah. But you know what? When you're drunk and you want some fucking nuggets, you know who's going to deliver every goddamn time?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Good old Mickey D's and Ronald and the Hamburglar. And I agree. I do it sober. Honestly, that's my... Yeah. I love me some McDonald's fries. They're among my favorite things.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I want some now.
I know I mentioned it, and I'm like,
yeah,
fuck.
Now I'm like, yeah, there's one on the way home.
Yeah, there's one down the
street.
Anyway, our boy, Roger Ebert, genuinely enjoyed the film, saying, quote, Stephen King seems to be working his way through the reference books of human phobias, and, quote, Cat Eye is one of his most effective films, unquote.
Yeah, you seem to really like it. Three stars.
I mean, that is a pretty good review for Mr. Ebert.
Yeah, you know how he feels about horror.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what about our other favorites? You know, like the 995 of them that awarded Cat's Eye a 3.1 stars on Letterboxd.
Yeah.
995?
Didn't even break 1,000. Didn't even break 1,000. I know.
Wow.
I know.
So, let's hear from those guys. So, user Tony the Terror kicks off his review stating, quote, well, of course I'm going to give 5 stars to a movie about a beautiful cat who wanders through some crazy situations before ultimately facing an evil gnome and becoming a hero. That's just a given.
It's a good summation of the movie right there, to
That's
be
better than IMDb.
Yeah, definitely. And I got to say, pretty ass cat. That is a gorgeous cat.
Yeah, tabbies are beautiful.
Jesus. Yeah, this one.
Britannia, the love of my life, is a gray tabby.
I do love her too. She is fantastic.
She's pretty.
Hey, yep. I agree.
Anyway. Belial Carboni awards the film 3.5 stars, saying it, quote, is the ultimate horror anthology for cat lovers, unquote. I read this review and I was just like, I was looking for someone to say it because it's true.
It is? I mean, you're a cat person, you're gonna love the fuck out of this movie.
Yeah, if you have cats, if you like cats, if cats just make you happy, like, this movie is all about cats.
That's so right.
Finally, Todd gives the film 4.5 stars, saying, quote, this is the fair film for the fair film. Fuck.
It's a little late, it's okay.
This saying, quote, this is the rare film that I find both creepy and adorable, and I recommend it to anyone with a soul or anyone who loves cats, which is a small overlap on a Venn diagram, unquote. Fuck you, buddy.
Jesus. Still likes the film. Still likes the film.
I know, but still. Fuck you, buddy. I have cats, and I have a soul.
Hey, you're part of the sliver.
The overlap sliver. And now... we are here at the Horrible People's Podcast, and we're creatures of habit.
Definitely.
You know? So, meaning that, you know, with anthologies, we have to.
Yes.
Do a good old play-by-play.
That's right. Yeah, let's fucking do it.
So let's just dive right in.
So the first one is the James Woods Drew Barrymore story.
No, yes.
It is Quitters, Inc. Oh boy, this is a fucking doozy. But to get started here, in the first 2 minutes, we actually get two Stephen King references with an adorable tomcat named the General being chased by the bloodied Cujo of Cujo fame.
I thought that was Cujo. I was like, is that Cujo?
It's totally Cujo.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Cujo. Actually, the director of this film, Lewis Teague, directed Cujo.
Oh.
Yeah. Which we'll cover at some point.
I've never seen it.
Oh, yeah, it's freaky.
I've never seen it.
We could turn this into the season of King, honestly, because that's actually worth coverage right there. For sure.
This creep show, Cujo, Children of the Corn.
And the next one, too, because while the cat's out doing his thing being chased, it was nearly ran over by the murderous car Christine, of Christine fame, of course, as noted by its bumper sticker, which reads, "Watch out for me, I'm pure hell, I am Christine." I did another typo there. Boy, it was late when I did this one.
Yeah. Okay. It's okay. We've had a weird week.
Yeah, we have. And by the way, we probably should cover Christine, too, because it would be, in the timeline, John Carpenter's next film on our schedule. Yeah. That's the Carpenter's comeback. It's very interesting.
I'd love to cover Christine. I like the idea of murderous vehicles.
Yeah. I drive in LA every day. I see them all the time. Anyways. No.
So the General eventually makes his way onto a delivery truck headed for New York City.
Oh, shit. Home of the bagels.
Where he takes a break to watch TV, only to be confronted with a plea for help from a disembodied vision of 1985's Drew Barrymore.
Yeah.
Like, help me.
It was almost like a Goosebumps kind of scene.
It was really, yeah.
This felt like Goosebumps right here, actually.
Yeah, it was weird. But, like, I just want to emphasize, like, this chase is like, dun 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 dun.
Yeah.
Like, it is a comedy of errors. Also, no human being pays attention to the cat running by them.
No, it does not.
Like, really weird. But, it plays out well. And then also, like, this cat runs into a truck. Mm-hmm. And I must also say, at this point in the movie, we are, like, 2 minutes in, max.
Yeah.
You see this cat, like, just, like, sitting with his, like, paws crossed on this truck, and I am, like, looking at this cat, and I think to myself, as I'm watching, if anything happens to this cat, I am killing everyone around me and then myself. Oh. Like, I am so, like...
You're, like, invested, like, please survive the journey.
Yes.
Please, absolutely. I know cat's in the title,
like,
but please.
I was upset this cat was stuck in the truck. Like, I was just like, does he have enough ventilation? Is it temperature controlled? Like, is this cat gonna be okay?
Hey, this cat's the fucking General, okay? Is the shit.
I want, like literally, I wanted nothing more than to just domesticate the fuck out of this tomcat. Like, I was just like, I will feed you the finest tunas for the rest of your goddamn life.
That's right. This is, honestly, and this cat totally fucking deserves it. But of course, this moment where the cat receives its first quest is
true.
Side quest.
No, literally, it's just like, answer me these riddles three. Like,
press A to accept. Okay, cool. I guess I'm doing this storyline. So this moment is interrupted when the General is captured by a fella who goes by the name of Junk. Taking the cat...
Trustworthy.
Yeah. Taking the cat to an organization called Quitters Inc. of title fame. And this guy looks like fucking Junk. He has that, like just garbagey kind of, like...
His arms, like just at a rest, don't touch his sides.
Yeah. He's a Neanderthal. It's fucking weird.
Neanderthal.
He's a fucking Neanderthal, dude. He's fucking weird.
In my head, I think he has, like, a really thick Jersey accent. I don't know if he actually did.
I mean, he has the vibe.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, where are we? Okay, so next we meet Dick Morrison, played by James Woods, who is guided by a friend to Quitters Inc. It's here we learn that the success rate is 100%, but the methodology of getting to that statistic is shrouded in mystery. Until we see the stranger console his wife as she exits the facility in tears.
Yeah. Which was weird to me at first. I'm like, oh, she's, like, bawling right now. And he, like, because he brings out the cigarette, like, because he's still not quite quitting yet.
Yeah.
And the guy, like, loses his fucking shit. It's like, oh, I can't. Like, he just loses it. But and the room itself is like cold. Like it's such a sterile environment.
It's sterile, and also we have these like motivational posters up on the wall. It's very weird and very off-putting, which was the intention, of course. Yeah, and then you see like James Woods, which is he's a fantastic actor. Mm-hmm. He's just sitting there and he's like, I think I've made a mistake.
After he signed the paper.
Yeah, he like wrote down his names and he's like, you know what? I've made a mistake.
Yeah, I'm
gonna go. And he tries to leave it, right? But yeah.
It's not working out. It's not working out because actually having signed his life away.
Yeah.
Just minutes before seeing this occur, Dick tries, of course, to make a hasty exit, but is guided to the office of clinic counselor Vinny Donati. Who pounds Dick's last cigarette into pieces at his desk when he's revealed to him, and follows that absurdity up with a terrifying example of what happens in the room just beside them with the one-way window.
This is, like, the first moment where I'm like, what is gonna go on? And, like, I was concerned and, like, anxious because basically he's like, do you have any cigarettes on you? And he's like, yeah. And he takes them, and it's, like, almost like a full pack of cigarettes. Like, mm-hmm. It is a shit ton of cigarettes.
Yeah,
he does. And he just, like, beats the shit out of them and, like, is just like, okay, and, like, sweeps them off into a drawer. And he's like, our methods are unconventional, but by the end of it, you will be cured. And I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah, he does, like, a fucking Donkey Kong, like, fucking punch down, too.
It's yeah!
Like, this thing's in pieces.
He does the Donkey Kong thing, yeah. Both fists just, like, slamming, yeah.
Eek. And, of course, in this weird room, is the newly captured general, who was then violently electrocuted through the trap flooring in a horrible act of cruelty that almost made me want to turn off the film, to be honest.
It was
fucking horrible.
Honestly, I'm like, how do you train a cat to do that?
It was goddamn gruesome, dude. It almost made me
Google. I'm like, was this cat actually hurt? Because
seriously,
it was upsetting.
It was convincing. It was so convincing. Based on how well this cat has acted throughout the entire film, I'd say it could still be okay.
Yeah. Animal actors, man.
But they are pushing it. They are goddamn pushing it, yeah.
Anyway, it is after this that Counselor Donati lays out his terms. If Dick tries just one cigarette, his wife will meet the same fate as the general, but survive. If he tries another, the same fate will be reserved for his daughter with less restraint.
Yeah.
And the third time will result with his wife being sexually assaulted in the worst way possible. Oh, and the entire Morrison clan will be monitored around the clock for at least the first month of the program.
These are some fucked up stipulations, I would say.
Of course!
Yeah, the way he even lays them out, it's like practical, but also kind of cruel. Like,
of course,
it's weird.
Obviously. Like, it's just, the whole time, again, this is how it turns into, like, a whole gang stalking type thing. And as I'm watching this, I'm like, this is terrifying. Like, this is legitimately a fear and anxiety I have.
No, I agree. Even the last one, I'm just like, he's like, and we got, like, a real, real mean guy to, like, do it. I'm like, oh. Yeah. This is...
Well, it's also because James Woods' character, Dick, there's a moment where he's, like, the Donati or whatever is reviewing the paperwork, and he's just like, I see you left your daughter's school blank. And James Woods' character is like, I don't see what my kid's school has anything to do with my treatment here. And he's just like, interesting.
I gotta say, the actor who plays Donati...
fucking freaky.
Menacing. He's actually really menacing. He was in something. I cannot remember what the fucking movie
was. Would you like me to find out?
Yeah, please. Actually, I gotta know. I kind of called it out when I was watching it, but I have forgotten to this point because it's a little late.
I pressed enter too soon, and I just Googled cat.
Cat is?
Yeah.
Like, I know what a fucking cat is.
I know what a cat is.
I'm doing a podcast on a cat, goddammit. Oh, what else was he in? It was something big.
Hold on. Alan King. He was in Rush Hour 2.
That's what it was. He was in Rush Hour 2. He was the, like, CEO businessman.
Oh.
Yeah. He got killed by Ricky Tan.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Rush Hour.
I love Rush Hour so much. Yeah, yeah. He was that guy. That was 100%.
Have you been to the Chinese restaurant in Chinatown that has in big bold letters on the side of the building, Rush Hour was filmed here?
No, I want to go. I live next to Chinatown.
I've been there. It's actually not bad. Oh, we should go.
I'm down. I'm down.
It's not bad.
All right, let's do it.
Like, literally on the side of the building, it just says, like, Rush, like, that scene in Rush Hour in the Chinese restaurant, it was filmed at that place.
I want some Mushu. All
right. I'm surprised you've never been. I thought you would have been, like, duh.
I don't visit Chinatown as much, despite me being, like, that's the closest thing to me.
I was
going to
say, you're right there.
It's literally the closest part of downtown
to me. I've been
to
Chinatown more often than you, because I used to go all the time.
Oh, yeah, I've only been, like, maybe 3 or 4 times.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I like it, but yeah, it's been a while. So Dick decides to hide this information from his family. And obviously, it's pretty messed up stuff. Yeah,
it's a big thing to keep from your family.
Definitely. And he goes home in a bit of a huffy mood, resulting in him berating an adaptation of Stephen King's The Dead Zone and his poor wife at the same time. I love the King cameo stuff. It's very interesting.
Like, all the little, it's just like, huh, huh, huh.
Uh-huh, Stephen King, huh? He wrote it. However, he is unable to sleep due to a really, really absurd dream that we're going to break down after this because I couldn't even write it down. What the hell happened there?
I don't remember it.
Oh, he makes his way, of course, after this dream to his desk and finds a rogue cigarette. It's the one with the dream is the, he's at a party. And the whole place is filling with smoke.
I love that dream. Oh, my God. And then suddenly everyone's smoking cigarettes and then the walls are smoking cigarettes.
Yeah, and then his friend, who is the guy from Independence Day, he's the jerk fucking guy that works with the president who knew about Area 51. And the tall dude.
Oh, shit.
That's him.
Oh, I wasn't even really, like, paying that much attention.
Yeah, his mouth is just full of cigarettes all lit.
The kids are smoking. Like, people have cigarettes coming out of their noses. It's really funny.
And he's, like, trying not to look. He's like, I quit. He's like, no, you didn't quit, man. Just fucking try it. Like, and it
exactly just... how, like, your parents kind of told you, like, older kids were going to pressure you into smoking and doing drugs. Like, how he's talking. He's just like, oh, whatever. Just smoke or whatever.
Right? And then you're getting, like, this fisheye camera lens thing
it's
going
good.
On. It is fucking absurd. And
it's pretty awesome.
It's cool, yeah. But of course, yeah, he finds the rogue cigarette from there on out in his desk.
A very rogue, very, like, busted cigarette.
Oh, yeah.
So, this is very freaky. At first, I thought he was being paranoid, but he attempts to light the cigarette, but is interrupted when he notices an unfamiliar pair of boots in his closet, and he realizes he's being watched.
Yeah, because, right, the storm scares him, and then he tosses something into the closet, and he hears, like, a little noise, and he's like, oh, shit, what the, like...
He realizes someone is sitting in the closet watching him at all times.
Right, and he's like, I didn't light it. And he fucking tries to go back to bed, but at this point, it's pretty obvious. He's not doing too good on the program so far.
It is day one.
It is day one. That's right. So the next day, he actually goes to his... and he also finds blood in the area in the morning.
Yes.
Where the boots were, because the boots ain't there no more.
Well, this is also where he sees... the next morning... there's like a jogger in front of his house and the jogger is wearing like different shoes than like running shoes because he switched them out in the closet.
Yep. Yeah.
And it's like this whole thing. And that's the kind of shit that like freaks me out, dude. I'm like, oh my God, this is like gang stalking. Like it freaks me out.
There's some really interesting stuff like that in this first segment. It's it's definitely more of the horror version.
It's more psychological.
Yeah, definitely. But the next day, he goes to his daughter's school to gift her a doll, only to find Counselor Donati stalking him in a very not-so-subtle way.
Yeah, this fucking, like, Richard Stack-looking motherfucker just, like, standing from behind the corner is just, like, unsolved mystery. Like, what the fuck? Or it's, like, to solve a predator. Like, what?
He has that creepy fucking smile, too. Like, it's just... It's just too much.
It's creepy.
Yeah, definitely.
So, immediately after this... actually, it's not immediately after. This is, like, 4 months after. I'm sorry. It's like 3 weeks after.
Oh, okay. It's so all, after.
It meant pretty much how it mentions after 2 weeks. Yeah, if I remember correctly, it's 2 weeks.
Because it's within the month, right?
It's within the month of his, yeah, but it's like 2 weeks. He's been doing well. So, but 2 weeks after, Dick is stuck in a very frustrating New York traffic jam while waiting for the bridge to drop. And he finds a spare cigarette in his glove compartment. He is paranoid, but believes himself to be out of sight of the cronies of Quitters Inc. And only to spend too much time smoking under his window, he pretty much gets honked at and is, like, yanked back into reality.
Yeah, yeah, because he's, like, enjoying the fuck out of this cigarette.
Yeah, he's just like, oh, thank God. Mm-hmm. He realizes he was being watched the whole goddamn time by the motorist directly next to
him. In the convertible.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's such a good scene. Like, I like this scene because it the camera work, whatever they do, yeah. He's really struggling here, like, can I get away with it? Can I get away with it? And he's snoping.
Can I? And he's looking around. Yeah. And then he thinks he can get away with it by, like, smoking, but, like, leaning over so no one can see him through the window, and then trying to get the, wave the smoke away.
And it's a long-ass traffic jam, so he's like, listen, we're going to be here a little bit.
He's like, I got the time. But then just as he lights up, the bridge lifts, and he doesn't get to pay attention, so then he gets honked at, and it's, like, a whole stressful situation. It's nuts.
It is. It is quite a bit. So, he returns home to a ravaged household with a missing wife, only to be greeted by a phone call from Donati, who arranges a 5 p.m. meeting.
Also creepy.
Yeah, he's pretty, like, just direct with it.
He's like, so when can I expect you? And it's like, truly, like, setting a business meeting.
Mm-hmm. Dick's pleas are ignored as he is then forced back into Quitters Inc. offices. While at the office, he witnesses his wife being violently shocked to the tune of 96 tears by Question Mark and the Mysterians.
Interesting. I don't know. I'm not super familiar with the song.
Oh, I love that song. It's like, dun, 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 no, no. That's, yeah.
Most 80s music.
No, that's like a 50s song.
Oh.
Yeah. It's like it's like an old
okay,
song.
Okay, remember, we've had this conversation. I listen, like, you, like, where you stop listening to music, I kind of pick up.
That's true. Yeah. The level of knowledge between the generations.
Two of us? Well, no, between the two of us, I think we're kind of unstoppable on music knowledge.
Yeah, that's true. But we just cover different eras.
Yeah, it's true. I think our overlap is David Bowie.
Definitely. That's where it coalesced.
Yeah,
right there.
Exactly.
I agree. Yeah. So this is, his wife is getting the shit shocked out of
yeah.
him.
Yeah. So
pretty bad.
Dick pretty much goes into rage mode, but his bitch ass is unsuccessful and fails to stop the act of violence against his wife, but the scuffle allows the general to escape the facility. He then explains everything to his wife when all is said and done, determined to never smoke again.
Yeah, it kind of seems like he has, like, kind of, he's almost able to get the one out, but there's two of them. Junk is, he's not giving up.
Yeah, no, the Neanderthal.
Yeah, yeah, he's like, mm-mm-mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and his poor wife, though, she is just, like, looking in terror as this
is all
happening.
Yeah, she's confused, and also, like, I'm sorry, but, like, let's traumatize the wife to make sure the husband doesn't smoke cigarettes anymore, and then the wife is just expected to be okay with it, so much so that the freaking head of the whole freaking operation is just like, no, she's gonna forgive him.
And they make the place the bet, right?
Yeah.
Oh my God, this is 80s as fuck.
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
So over time, Dick remains cigarette free, but has put on a few pounds as a result. So to combat this, he receives illegal diet pills from Donati and is warned that if he gains weight, his wife loses her little finger. Afterward, the couple have dinner with the friend from the first part of this tale, where then Dick notices his friend's wife is missing that very finger, after a good old toast to Quitters Inc.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I'm just like, some psycho shit.
It never stops. It's always something. It's like, okay, well, now you're losing weight. And also, he laughs at the joke. Like, he thinks, like, Donati is, like, fucking with him, and he's just like, well, if you don't lose weight, I'm gonna cut off your wife's little finger. And it's like, it's just like, it's not a joke.
And his friend's wife, like, when they're toasting, she's like apprehensive
about, yeah, Quitters Inc. Yeah,
it's a lot. So yeah, this was probably the darkest tale, I'd say, of the three. I don't know. Well, the next one's pretty dark, too.
No, this next one's my least favorite.
Oh, is it?
I don't. I literally could care less about this one.
Oh, interesting. Well, I actually kind of liked it.
Really? Like, yeah. I mean, it was fine. Like, it was entertaining, but it was, like, out of the three, I was just kind of like, eh.
No, it is the most disposable of the three, I'd say. Because this one has, like, James Woods and, like a pretty interesting tale throughout.
A terrifying, like, psychological, like, reality. Yeah. You know, like,
it feels the most Kingy.
It's gaslighting.
Yeah, it feels the most Stephen King, I'd say, out of all three
Okay,
tales.
Fair
yeah,
enough.
Yeah, I would say that. This one, though, this one's interesting. It's weird because, well, we'll talk about it right now. So,
the general finds his way...
Well, what's the name of this one?
Oh, it's called The Ledge.
The Ledge.
The Ledge. So, the general finds his way to a Staten Island ferry after his escape, eventually landing in Atlantic City, where disembodied 1985 Drew Barrymore once again reminds him of his quest to save her. Save me!
So he did the side quest. He got some XP leveling up
there. Yeah, he leveled up.
Yeah, now he's on the main quest. He's using the map markers. He's good.
He's on his shit.
He definitely is. Now, former Dennis Pro turned gambler Johnny Norris.
Dennis?
Former tennis pro. Wow, I really was losing. Former tennis pro turned gambler Johnny Norris finds himself.
Who the fuck is a Dennis pro?
He's really good at Always Sunny Dennis quotes.
I know. I was going to say, I'm like, Dennis.
He's the golden god, all right? So he finds himself involved with a woman who has, of course, a jealous husband.
Of course.
This husband being a crime boss by the name of Kressner, also a fellow gambler. Though a little more extreme than Norris.
Yeah.
He's also very sleazy looking. Like, really sleazy.
Oh, he's
looking.
Like the quintessential, like, crime boss, like, sleaze fest.
Mm-hmm.
So, let it be noted that Kressner will bet on anything.
Anything.
So, they both bet as to whether the general will make it across a dangerous Atlantic City street without getting hit by a car. Norris stupidly bets against the main character in this movie and loses, while Mr. Crime Boss takes the feline protagonist home with him to his penthouse.
Thus, starting his next side quest.
Yes, so, absolutely.
Yeah, next side quest for
he's
sure.
He's like, the general is sitting on the side of the street and he like looks across and it's just like side quest. And he accepts it.
Yes. Yeah. He needs the XP. He's got a big one coming up, I gotta say.
He needs it.
And of course this, I can't express the accident that happens from this is fucking insane. Like the cars hitting each other.
The accident that happens, and like, of course, Kressner is just like, haha, it doesn't matter, I win.
He's like loving it. But of course, soon after, Kressner manages to kidnap the famous tennis player and plants drugs in his Mustang, offering him a new wager. On the threat of blackmail, of course, so he really doesn't have any reason not to take it.
And this is after, like, of course, him and the wife are just like, we're going to run away together and it's going to be all okay.
Oh, yeah. The good old basic setup.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
So, the bet is very simple, but very dangerous. Norris must navigate around the ledges of the crime boss's penthouse, making it all the way around. If he wins, his troubles go away, and he is granted a great deal of money, and he is given Kressner's own wife.
Just given, freely.
Mm-hmm. If he loses, well, I mean, he dies.
Yeah.
If he dies, he dies.
He dies.
If he dies... He dies.
Notably released 1 year after Rocky IV. So there you go. That's just the philosophy of the 80s right there.
And if he chooses not to comply, Kressner will make sure that the police jail Norris on drug charges and tank his career. Obviously, Norris chooses the ledge, hence the name.
Yes. Oh, boy. Shitty bet, shitty circumstance, but also shitty characters, so who the fuck?
Oh, my God.
They're all pretty bad.
They're all annoying.
Norris is basic as fuck. Kressner is just like that, like, like kind of weird fucking villain. He's got a henchman.
Skeletor.
Yeah, he's totally Skeletor. But, like, chubby and fucking weird.
Right. I don't know. But the cackling and just being like, it's Skeletor.
Yeah. In the name of just trying to keep you on your toes, Kressner performs a series of acts along the penthouse in an attempt to get Norris to fall to his death. Yes, General, I know.
you summoned her.
This involves a bullhorn, rogue drapes, a fire hose, and a lot of taunting. So Yeah.
He's so stupid.
Mm-hmm. This is the majority of the whole segment, actually. It's just him fucking with him trying to get around a ledge, and he's almost falling down.
I know.
He's like not it's falling just, down.
It's dumb. I don't like this one.
It's pretty tense if you're care about him dying, but
I don't care.
Yeah, like, you know he's gonna make it.
I know.
You kinda know he's gonna make it, yeah. But it's still pretty interesting, like, how creative Kressner gets
with it.
It's
true. He does, yeah. Like, that's the one thing where I'm just like, oh, so this is where Jigsaw got it from.
Yeah, yeah. The fire hose in particular, I was just like, oh, he's fucked.
And yeah,
I was like,
exactly.
Oh, he did it, okay. But he's also improbably catching the ledge.
He's doing that, and then there's, like, a moment where, like, he makes a couple, like, very unreasonable saves, and I'm like, you should be dead.
You should totally, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Or you should be dead. One factor not taken into account, but given a ton of screen time somehow, is a very villainous-looking pigeon who does not like Norris encroaching on his territory. But despite the hurdles, Norris makes it across the entire penthouse. Though he is a far more bloody and beaten man by the end of it.
This is the most evil-looking pigeon.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's like, he's a meticulous, like, fuck you, motherfucker, looking, like, yeah.
He's not moving.
All pigeons, though. Like, pigeons are brutal.
That's true. They are assholes.
They have a bloodlust, for sure.
Oh, and he's just, the way they do the pecs, too. You see the blood spots on his sock. And it's actually, it's pretty brutal, but it's also, like, it goes on a while.
I'm sure it doesn't help with your focus when you're trying not to fall off of a 5-inch ledge.
Yeah, using those ankles, that's for sure. Yeah, no. No. Of course, Kressner honors the deal, but with a caveat. He can have, quote-unquote, Kressner's wife, but he only gets her severed head.
Oh.
Yeah. He's basically, and you see this a little bit, he's plotting to pretty much screw him out of, like, whatever results he was getting.
Of course.
Yeah, Kressner's not a trustable guy.
He's not a man of his word in the sense that, like, he follows it. It's just like, well, I'm going to follow it, but, like, not the way you thought. It's a monkey paw agreement.
Yeah, I'm going to win. He wants to win, no matter what. Yeah.
So, in a rage, Norris attacks Kressner and is about to be taken out by his armed henchmen, but the general manages to trip him up in the middle of the escape. This frees the gun and puts Kressner at Norris's mercy.
Yeah, this cat is just... That's the boss fight right there.
Yeah.
He gets past the henchmen, he escapes the level, he's doing pretty good.
He got the XP he wanted, he leveled up.
He did, he leveled up right there, actually, right when he exited, it was great.
Yeah.
And Kressner sucks.
He does a little Mario, like...
Yeah. Fucking hits the flag as he walks out
of the casino. Yeah, exactly. Thank you, yes.
After killing the henchmen, of course, shooting directly at the goddamn face, Norris makes the same bet. Keeping Kressner on his toes at the ledge with his newly acquired gun. Kressner encounters the same vicious pigeon and, of course, is unable to handle it and plummets to his death because he does not have tennis player ankles.
Those weak ankles.
Yep. And he falls and splatters right in front of the newly freed cat, the general.
Yeah, and, like, free cat, the general, is just, like, looking at him just like...
Meow. Yeah, like, ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I won. I beat you.
I won, bitch.
So you didn't like that one, huh?
No, it was fine.
Yeah.
It was my least favorite, for sure. I definitely was on my phone for, like, 80% of it.
Yeah, I was watching it, and I was engaged in it, but at the same time, I'm like, not even close to the other two.
Yeah.
Not even close to the other two.
Yeah, on my phone, I think there was at one point I just, like, got up and started doing chores. Like, I was like, this is, like...
Oh, he's still on the ledge? Okay.
Yeah. It's like, oh, great, there's a hose involved. Exciting.
Yeah. And then Kressner just, he's definitely has that, like, Palpatine crackle sometimes.
Yeah.
That's fucking weird. Yeah. But of course, now I think the general's he's leveled
now,
up quite a bit.
He's leveled up. He's ready.
Specced.
He's ready to take on the town.
Yeah.
This next one is called General.
That's right. Yeah.
So our feline protagonist takes a page from the Hobo Handbook and hops a freight train to Wilmington, North Carolina.
That's right.
Where it is adopted by an in the flesh 1985 Drew Barrymore, whose name is Amanda.
Oh, we learned it. Yay.
Finally, she has a name.
This is the last level for sure for him. You can tell.
Yeah, it feels like it.
So Amanda is smitten with the general, giving him his name and wanting him to sleep with her in her room, where she is experiencing terrifying nightmares of a vicious troll.
Yeah, you bring up an excellent point here. Up until this, he does not have a name.
No.
He's just a cat.
He's just Alley Cat. He's just, yeah.
Did you ever hear that? Like, song as a kid. Mm. Like, the cat came back the very next day. No. He thought he was gonna...
Oh, yeah. Okay, that one, you go a little further into it. Yes, yeah. It's literally been his childhood. That's a long one. That's a long time.
So, so if you keep going through the song, there's a lyric where basically it's literally about this cat who just won't fucking die. But as a kid, there was a sound effect, because it's like in a verse of this song, this cat gets sucked into a tornado, and there's this lyric, and not one was ever found or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the way they did the sound effect for it in this song that on the CD that I had, it made it sound like it was like, and not one was ever found.
Oh.
It scared the living fuck out of me as a kid.
Really?
Like, the sound effect, I was just like, oh my God, not one was ever found. Oh my God. Oh. And it's like, literally, my dad had to like make me say my name into a microphone and do the same effect, like just to like prove to me that like it was like, it's like, he's like, it's just a sound effect. Cause like, it terrified me.
Oh, that is interesting. I wonder if that created some like spooky like I'm basis sure, right there.
I'm sure it didn't do great things for my psyche.
Oh,
but
that's fun.
Yeah, like to this day, NorCal Dad will talk about this, and it is just like he loves talking about this too, because he's just like, I don't know why you were so freaked out by it. I'm like, I don't know why I was either, but it was freaky as fuck.
That was your Chucky.
Yeah, absolutely. The Cat Came Back song with the weird voice distortions.
That's right. Oh, fuck, wow. Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious.
Anyway, that was my quick side note.
No, it's good. It's good. This is a very cat-centric episode.
Exactly. Nice, yeah. I was like, if I can't tell the story now, when? While all this is going on with the vicious troll and, you know, Amanda being a sweetheart, her mom, however, is not, and is a heinous bitch.
Yes.
And is not a fan of the newly adopted cat, claiming he'll harm their parakeet. It doesn't help that the general does kill a wild bird almost immediately after she says this.
That's what cats do!
Right. And she is warned via message from her grandmother that a stray cat may try to steal her breath while she sleeps. She may steal Amanda's.
Yeah.
It's like this whole thing.
It's kind of a contrived setup. Kind of weird.
It's weird.
Yeah, it's like, here's the irrelevant folktale. Oh, okay. Wow, to the situation, huh? Okay.
That works. Relevant to the situation, mark?
That works pretty good. Okay. And yeah, the mom is like fucking insane.
Yeah, she's just, yeah, it's really weird. Like, she's in like a power struggle with a cat.
Yeah, and this doesn't really let up. Like,
no.
Throughout the entire rest of the segment.
Okay, we're going to get into it, but there is a moment where I, like, lost all respect for this woman.
Oh, no, she's pretty crazy. Amanda's mother forced the cat, of course, to sleep outside that very night, not knowing that her daughter is indeed being stalked by a troll that appears from a makeshift opening in the wall across from Amanda's bed.
What was with you when you wrote this?
I don't know, probably a little buzzed.
Okay.
Oh, and it is in fact the troll who wants to steal Amanda's breath. So that grandmother's full of shit.
It's the trolls, not the cats. My cats have done nothing but protect me.
Now, the matriarchal side of that camp, the whole family just hates cats.
It's true.
Yeah, they're
insane.
They just
have a severe cat allergy or something. Mm-hmm. So, of course, this troll is not without a little snack. So, this troll, by the way, working a set that was built 8 times to scale, sneaks up to the birdcage and murders the absolute fuck out of said parakeet, leaving the cage a bloody mess. The general does try to stop it, but is not quick enough and ultimately gets the blame. This is so frustrating as a viewer to watch, and it just sucks you in, too, because you just, right? Like... Obviously, you get to know the whole enchilada, the whole picture, so as to say.
You're the audience member that gets the information, but the characters don't all have it.
Which is, I personally think, is a very fun storytelling device.
I agree. It's a Hitchcock storytelling device. Yeah. That's how Hitchcock does it.
But, it's frustrating as fuck.
Yeah, well, it also feels really goosebumpsy.
Yes.
Like, the way it's all set up and the family dynamic, it really does.
Absolutely. Actually, you bring up a great point, because a lot of, like, the Goosebumps, like, kind of vignette style, it also is very similar. But also, Goosebumps frustrated the fuck out of me as a kid for this exact reason.
Yeah, a lot of stories have that device.
Where it's just like, you're sitting there and it's just like, I know the truth, why don't like everyone else? And it was very frustrating for me as a kid because I didn't fucking get it.
Yeah, I I agree, and I think it's also kind of why I would always continuously, like, finish the books, because they really wouldn't tie it up until
the very... It's why you have to finish everything in one sitting, because it's like, I want answers. Like, I don't... Like, that's why when anytime someone compliments, like, my reading speed, I'm like, I'm not a fast reader. I'm just dedicated to knowing answers.
Mm-hmm. Right? I am an obsessive person. How about that? That's why it happens.
I'm a nosy bitch. What do you want?
But also, the set being built 8 times the scale actually looks pretty good.
So I kind of picked up that it was definitely built, like, to scale, but it looks fucking cool.
Mm-hmm. There's something about the special effects of this one. It's still very 80s in a lot of spots, but, like, it just comes together really good.
This is the section that also does give, like, Trilogy of Terror, obviously, because of the little troll and the Zuni fetish doll or whatever.
Yeah, the fucking suit.
That was your creation.
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah, that's right. And it's in my head, there's always a visual of that. I know it's not in the film.
It's not in the film at all.
I think it's our imagination
from the podcast.
Very powerful. So, and of course, in the middle of the scuffle, the troll did wield a sword against our favorite cat hero, resulting in a big wound that Amanda's father, right? Oh, it's a nasty looking one, too. But Amanda's father does notice this, and realizes it actually likely wasn't made by the parakeet. Though the bitch-ass mother seems to be unable to give two shits about this particular fact. She's stubborn.
Mother fucking is just like, well, good on the bird for... Mm-hmm. And it's just like, oh my god, you are a heinous bitch.
Oh, this is the future QAnon fucking Karen ass mom.
My
like
god,
she is
I
that's
know.
Her.
She's like refuses to take all the information in, mm-hmm. like absolutely psycho.
It's gonna make you sterile. Pfizer's gonna make you sterile. That's her. That's her right there.
Yeah, she's emailing like Drew Barrymore. Mm-hmm.
She's the one at Whole Foods yelling at people like, "Oh, they hire too many Browns." Like she's like one of those. Like,
oh
she,
no.
Yeah. No, I believe it. You see the cadence of this woman.
Yeah. Absolutely.
She crazy.
So in an even malicious turn, it goes from like bad to worse in this case. Amanda's mother takes the general to a kill shelter, leaving Amanda vulnerable to the troll the subsequent night. With a doorstop and a can-do attitude, the troll makes his final attempt to steal Amanda's breath.
I love how it's a simple doorstop. He's just like, okay, cool. I know how humans work now.
Right, he's just like, I know how this shit works. I'm just gonna wedge that right in there with my little shitty troll strength.
Yeah, and by the way, Amanda's mom is basically cackling as she does this. She is like, just like, ha ha, and you'll never be alive again.
Literally, she like lures the general into this box, and it's just like, come here, you little shit. And it, literally, she is the villain of this. Like,
she totally
the troll is.
Is
like, I feel like this is just like his evil little nature, but she is like evil. Like,
yeah,
she is
dude.
A bitch.
She really is. She sucks. The troll's just doing its thing. Like, he's, she's crazy.
Yeah,
she's crazy.
Okay, again, I say this again. She is in a power struggle with a cat.
Oh, and like,
she is in a quarrel with a cat.
She is barely winning too. Everybody's again. They're like, not that bad.
She's one of those people who like gets into like imaginary fights with children and thinks the kids are out to get her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like
that's
those.
Right.
You know,
absolutely. Like, oh, they shouldn't be doing jump rope on the lawn. Like, you don't have to cut their jump ropes into pieces. Jesus,
or
lady.
Even, like, just thinking, like, kids are, like, being manipulative little shitheads all the time, and it's just, like, they're kids.
Yeah. Yeah,
of course
right.
they are. Mm-hmm. Like, you're just taking it personally. Like, be the adults in the situation.
There's
like,
no point where she is the adult in the situation.
No.
Not at all. There's not one point in this whole fucking movie.
She's a little psychopath.
She is insane. And Amanda's, like, and Drew Barrymore's goddamn sweetheart comparatively. She is just a joy. Full of joy.
The dad just has his nose in a fucking newspaper, and he's like, well, better go to the office. And I'm just like... You poor child.
You have no support.
You poor child. And so she takes this cat to a kill shelter. She pretty much, like, literally just drops it off and is just like, euthanize this shit.
Yeah.
And leaves.
Ugh. This is why she was disembodied in a quest structure prior to this little Drew Barrymore.
Right.
This is why. It's like, listen, nobody's listening to me. I am going to do my best fucking seance here to try to get this to go on.
Did they
like,
ever explain where disembodied Drew Barrymore was coming from?
They probably did in the prologue that got cut.
Fair enough.
Yeah. That's because, remember, the creative team was pissed about that.
Yeah.
So the general having seen enough shit by this point, quickly scurries past the minimum wage employee attempting to feed him his last meal and books it towards Amanda's house.
This is a real, like, I don't know.
It's like that one guy in The Simpsons with this fucking, the voice that's all scratchy. He's like, oh, okay, I guess I'll just give him his last meal.
Yeah.
Here you go, little buddy. And then the fucking general's like, dude, you're nothing to me. Like, literally, yeah. I survived a fucking mob boss.
This is a real Homeward Bound story.
Oh, it's so a Homeward Bound story in the middle of this fucking movie.
Like, somehow, this cat, which, by the way, has done, like, a plane, a train, and an automobile. Like,
yeah, yeah. This thing has seen some, right?
No, literally, we're talking a ferry, a train, and a truck. Like, yes. It is an offshoot of planes, trains, and automobiles, my friends.
Oh, it is great.
Nutso. And somehow manages to know, somehow, okay, this is the equivalent of me blindfolding you, Anthony, yeah. Driving you somewhere, and you somehow finding your way back to my apartment.
I mean,
because this cat was in a box. How did it...
But the cat was also, like, in New York.
Right, so, that's what I'm,
the, like, box is the least of it. He's just like, okay, this is actually a much easier quest. I can get knocked this out in a night.
Well, that's what I was saying. It went from wherever it was before to New York to Atlantic City to where the fuck was
Wilmington,
it?
North Carolina.
To North Carolina. And then somehow managed to meander its way. And I think it was actually sprinting. The general sprinted from the kill shelter back to Amanda's house. How?
While the fucking minimum wage employee's like, oh boy, I'm gonna get in trouble for this one. Like,
sure.
Oh, it was great. This cat's fucking wonderful. I love it.
Yeah, like, the second the door opened, like, he's sitting there, like, he's faking him out, too. He's like, I'm asleep.
Oh,
don't
my
worry
God,
about it. I'm asleep. And then the second the door opened, he's like, gotcha, bitch.
This cat acting. Okay, this cat acting is amazing.
Cat acting.
Is there an Oscar for animals? This cat is, like,
absolutely.
The pioneer right here.
Yeah,
the pioneer.
It.
Oh, my God.
The troll has nearly finished giving Amanda the Dementor's kiss when the general shows up and gets into a major brawl that does create quite a commotion in her room. Her parents naturally hear the noise and attempt to break in, but do not have the 2 a.m. arm strength to get around the doorstep situation.
No, they don't. They do not.
Which is stupid. Again, and then...
Her child is in trouble.
Yeah. And she's screaming. Still, Amanda cheers the general, who ultimately kills the troll by flinging him into her fan, and it is bloody. Ugh. Now, let's dissect this a
please,
little bit.
Please, please, yes.
Because you're, how old is Drew Barrymore in this movie? Like, I don't know, 8, 7?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, if she's, like, maybe 5 in E.T., then she's, yeah, she's gotta
she's
be, like,
oh, 7?
Yeah, 7 or 8.
She's screaming. If I hear a 7-year-old scream, and, like, I have any emotional connection to that kid, I am, like, up. Like, I am
right?
Awake. And these fucking useless parents, like, the dad is, like, just, like trying to shoulder his way in through this door, and a shitty, like, 50-cent doorstop.
Dude, it doesn't even look that effective.
It doesn't. It does not. Like, there's no fucking way. I'm just like, also, but no, why is there a doorstop? Like, it doesn't... Not that I was really poking holes because there's a troll that comes through the door or through the wall, like, you know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, it doesn't have to make a lot of sense, but I'm just like, out of all the ways he could have, like, blocked the door, that's the one you, that's what you went with?
Yeah, exactly. Like, how do we fucking, how does he do, you know what, doorstop, it's really effective. It's like,
doorstop.
It's not. It's not. And but by the way, this fight is like, it goes on a bit. This cat is like clawing right on top
of
Drew Barrymore.
Oh, yeah. We have a reappearance of Every Breath You Take.
Oh, we do.
It's fucking great.
And this, oh, I love this. Oh, by the way, this troll looks pretty interesting. It's a well-designed troll.
I love this troll.
Right?
Also, this is an original story. So the first two, obviously, we've been over it. But this original story by Cokehead Steve, mm-hmm. fucking choice.
We talk about, right, I agree. Because despite it, like, being, not making too much sense and being a little contrived, it's entertaining as fuck. It's a
fun way to tie the whole thing together. I will say we should, okay, let's finish it before
yeah,
I get to
definitely,
that.
Definitely. Yeah. Okay, so there's.
Because I do have a thought about the whole, like, this as a unit.
Yes, sword bite versus claw. Claw wins and it gets flung into the fucking fan. Oh boy. So, once the parents muster up the arm strength to actually get through the door.
Which they do.
They make it. Amanda frantically tells her parents what happened. They are skeptical at first until they notice that the fan is indeed covered with the body parts of what appears to be a legitimate troll, including a dagger that seems to be just big enough to make an all-too-familiar wound on their new house cats.
Yeah, buddy. Yep. Fuck you guys.
And the mom just looks like she's like, I'm a fucking idiot. Like, she is that, like, dumbfounded, like, I did not win this one.
Beautiful, because they try to swear Amanda to secrecy, but then are immediately blackmailed by the young, thinking, you know, child, yeah, who basically tries to get them to allow the general to guard her as she sleeps at night, thus keeping the trolls at bay as the general feasts on a surprisingly big fish. He then cuddles with Amanda, living happily ever after with his new family in Wilmington, North Carolina.
Oh, a happy, still kind of goosebumps. No, not a goosebumpsy ending, because those usually end in twists. But this is a nice little ending.
I would say, yeah.
It's a nice little weird bow to, like, wrap on the whole thing. Because, I mean, obviously, you're invested in the cat the whole time. So the cat being, the hero at the end.
He gets, you know, the happy ending.
And he eats the fuck out of that fish.
You should never feed a whole fish to a cat like that.
She's probably still trying to kill the cat. Honestly.
The bones are bad.
Yeah,
it'll kill the cat.
Yeah, her mom's kind of, she's not good.
Yeah. Evil.
Oh, man. So that was a movie, huh?
That was certainly a movie. So the point that I was going to make earlier, but I wanted to finish, like, the plot first. Mm-hmm. This segment does kind of stand out as it is the only supernatural segment.
Yeah, it is.
So it does kind of, like, stand out as, like, a little, like, well, this is weird. Mm-hmm. The one thing I do like, obviously, is the general kind of carrying them through all of them. I do like that. I thought that was cool.
It's such a good way to, like, mm-hmm. like, string together the stories, for sure.
I think it would have been, I don't know how else they would have done it, but doing a story without a supernatural element would have been cool.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it's weird because when I've seen a lot of reviews and people talk about this movie and trying to prepare for the episode, a lot of people, when they saw this movie as kids, tend to relate a lot and really like the third segment. Because, yeah, 80s kids. Yeah. It makes sense. It makes total sense.
You're a little kid. You're scared of noises under your bed. Mm-hmm. And you want someone there to protect you. And your parents are shitheads and they don't care.
Yeah. It's crazy. They're such bad parents. They're so bad. But it's kind of weird because I feel like it was the least scary of all the segments to me. Or the least, like,
Little troll was freaking me out.
I thought it was so fun.
I mean, it was fun, but yeah. Also, like, I mean, if I saw this as a kid, I could see it.
I can see that, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. You know what I will say? I would show the last segment to, like, as, like, an introduction to horror for, like, a 11 to 13-year-old.
That makes sense. I agree. I think that that fits perfectly within that range. Totally does. I mean, you know me. I grew up with much worse,
I mean,
younger.
That's just kind of like my estimate as neither a parent nor someone who watched horror as a small child. So, like, I'm just spitballing here. But I think this would be a fair horror movie to start. The first two are a little, like, intense for a young child, but I think mm-hmm. the last one, I think, is good.
Yeah, the last one, genuinely, I think, it's the kind of way you should end a movie like this, for sure. For sure. And King kind of, he got to be pretty creative with it, which I think is nice. How would you rate each of the segments? Or not rate, what would you say about the movie overall?
Overall?
Yeah.
I liked it. It was very enjoyable. It was a fun way to spend, you know, an hour and a half. It's a very easy hour and a half.
Dude, it's paced pretty well, honestly. It is. Yeah.
Yeah, it's paced very well.
Yeah, I agree. Christian Rick has been recommending it for years.
Good recommendation.
Yeah, I'm great. I actually really liked it. I think even the middle segment, besides being clearly the worst, is still pretty entertaining in its own way.
It's still the worst, but in comparison to the other two, like, it's not, like, a bad thing.
No, definitely not. My favorite segment was the first one with James Woods.
Mine too.
Yeah, I think because we were watching as adults.
Right. Can you rate them? Or can you rank them? Like,
oh, I'd rank them for sure. I think our rankings can be pretty similar. James Woods, The Quitters Inc. number one,
mm-hmm.
two. General number two, and then three is
same.
The Ledge.
Okay, yeah. I have the same one.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Because, like, and to me, actually, General is actually pretty close to the first one. Like, it's not a significant gap. I think they're both way different.
Yeah.
Like, they're way different. But really, like, I love anthologies.
I love an anthology. I grew up on, like, even, like, child's anthologies. Like, even not horror movies, but there were, like, these, like, weird... I know this is, like, some weird, like, out-of-nowhere thing. But there were these very weird, like, children writing stories, and then this weird Canadian company would turn them into shorts.
Oh, that's cool.
It was very cool, but I have no idea what they were called. I have no idea where they even came from.
Probably some lost media shit by this
point.
It
is truly some lost media shit. If you know what I'm talking about, please let me know.
Yeah.
But I used to watch them, and they were all shorts, and, like, they were very Canadian. Super Canadian. But yeah, so I love, like, shorts or anthologies or stuff like that. I don't know. I think they're cool.
I think so, too.
Or even Goosebumps.
This feels very Goosebumpsy. It really does.
Like, I love Goosebumps.
I do, too. And if they would have done the Goosebumps movie similar to this, in terms of, like, having something stringing along and having different stories,
it
would have been way better than whatever the commercial bullshit we got before. Because, like, yeah, I don't know. It's a pleasant watch, to be honest with you. Despite the first segment's definitely the darkest.
Yes, I feel like the first one gave me some, like, dread, where I was like, "Oh God, what am I in for?"
Yeah,
and it progressively got lighter.
It did. You know what? This is very much that's a good point. It's almost like a catch-all of King.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. Because King, you know, he has some
also,
sway between
Also, if
the
you
stuff.
Are an ardent King fan, if you want to see so many King references, King references, just watch this movie.
What was it? Which one was the one of the moms was reading Pet Sematary also?
In what?
It, during one of the scenes, one of the moms was reading it in bed.
Yeah.
I'm like, and that's just again, just sprinkled throughout. Like, just it's a little Stephen King love letter written to himself. That's essentially what it is. Okay, so with that, we got the rankings. We both like the movie. What would you rate Cat's Eye out of 5 missions from a disembodied 1985 Drew Barrymore?
I will give it. You know what? I'll be generous. I'm going to give this a 3.75.
Shit, that's pretty good. You know what?
Not quite a 4, but also not quite a 3.5.
I'm going to give it a 4. I'm actually going to give it a 4. For the sheer fact that I think I like that it gets progressively lighter and that I didn't have to get a heavier bit after that really dark first segment.
Okay. And the middle one really took me out of it. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, see, I enjoyed the middle one, though.
Yeah.
Although I do feel like now, maybe in retrospect, the middle one might be a one-time watch compared to the other two. Because I feel like you can get mine, the first and third, for quite a bit. And
I'm
number
so
two's pretty straightforward.
I'm so glad we can watch movies for the first time and we both don't hate them. Because every time I pick movies that we both haven't watched, it usually just turns into disaster.
Right? Well, this one has been on the docket for a little
bit. It's
true.
But
yeah, there you go. Awesome. Honestly, yeah, if you guys haven't seen it, find Cat's Eye. I actually technically own it because on YouTube it was either $4 to rent it or $5 to just buy it outright.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Same thing.
I didn't need to save the dollar. I was okay. I spent a dollar on worse. So
I spent a dollar on worse.
I was like, fuck it. I'll just have it. Be able to show it to people. That'd be nice.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure if I was going to like it enough to be like, yay, I own it. And I don't know. Maybe I'll buy it. I'll buy it after. But
is there an upgrade program? What's going on?
Right. Like, can I upgrade to my? Yeah. Can I upgrade my purchase? No. But okay. Is there anything else you want to say?
No.
Okay. So
not necessarily, I think we're okay.
Cool. So that was Cat's Eye from 1985. So yeah, Jesus.
I know.
We are almost through September, guys. And we are getting back into the swing of things.
And we got some stuff for you, too.
Yeah.
Speaking of marginal upgrades.
No, okay. So a couple things. We mentioned it at the top of the episode. But first off, thank you so much, everyone, for listening. You guys are fucking awesome. And
absolutely.
We love you. If you like what you heard and want to tell us about it,
hey.
I hope you would consider leaving a 5-star review or writing us a review on iTunes, as well as subscribing wherever you're listening, wherever you get your podcasts. It means the fucking world to us. And we learned we're like in like the top 10 charts in Denmark for some reason.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we're in some, for some reason, other countries we do really well.
Okay, however, we are in the top 100 for the US, and yeah. I will take that and fucking run with it.
That's right. I dig it.
So, y'all are the fucking best. And it's in analytics like that, to help us climb those kinds of charts, it's from reviews and subscriptions on iTunes as well as other podcasting platforms. So you guys are the fucking best.
We truly appreciate it. Yes. Because I remember when we first saw some stuff like that, we were like, oh, cool, we're like number 100 something in like weird country.
Uh-huh.
We're like, yeah, we're 3 digits out of thousands of podcasts. But now 2 digits.
Yay!
Hey!
Jesus, yeah, you're right. So that's super awesome. Also, couple things in terms of social media. So we have Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod, and we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. You can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. I am taking a break from Law and Order SVU because it is driving me nuts.
Good call.
I was burning out bad. I'm like, I need to watch something else. Like, I need, like, to cleanse my soul and my brain. Also, like we mentioned up top, we just launched a Patreon this month.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about it in earlier episodes, but because we record some of these episodes ahead of time, the content wasn't completely fleshed out yet. But now, at this point where we're recording, it totally is. And we are super duper excited to bring you this project, which is something that we have been talking about for a super long time.
Yes.
And we're just honored that you guys even want us to make a Patreon.
That's true. I've had requests for many years.
You guys are the fucking best.
Thank
you. So if you want, go check it out. The link is in probably all of our social bios. It's probably going to be something like patreon.com/horrorpeoplepod or something. From what I remember, it's going to be something like that. Patreon.com/horrorpeoplepod, or you can go to our socials and find it there.
Mm-hmm.
We have 4 different tiers, and we're offering some really awesome content, exclusive content just there. We're offering, you know, some BTS content, bloopers even, as we come up with them, because we are not this fucking cool and collected all the time, believe us.
There's a lot of cutting that happens. Definitely.
So we have 4 different tiers, anywhere from $5 to $50, whatever. The fact that you even are considering giving us money means the fucking world to me.
Absolutely.
Feel free to check that out. We have a ton of super awesome content, as well as some cool stuff to give away. I don't know, should I whet their appetite?
Whet it a little bit, I say.
So, we are starting a pre-show called Horrible News,
mm-hmm.
And that starts at our lowest tier.
That's right. Everybody gets the news.
Everyone gets the news, which is a super cool pre-show where some of you, you know, we get to talk about, you know, what's going on in the world and in the horror world.
That's right.
And then we're doing quarterly commentary tracks.
That's right.
So you get to, a lot of people want to know our thoughts as we're watching a movie. Now you're going to get it. Some of our patrons are going to be getting early episode releases. Right now, as I said, sometimes we record our episodes way, way in advance. You could be listening to this episode way, way in advance.
Mm-hmm.
You could be getting shout-outs, t-shirts. You could produce this fucking show.
That's right.
At our highest tier, you could pick an episode, or you could pick a film, video game, whatever, a horror-themed item of your choosing, and we will cover it. No questions asked, buddy. So head on over to patreon.com/horrorpeoplepod for more information. That is my little, like,
Honestly, now that I realize that we've done that, someone's going to pick fucking Cannibal Holocaust. That's going to happen.
That's fine. I'll cover it.
Then we'll have to. You guys give us money. Fuck it.
Yeah. You know what? Pay for my Starbucks addiction. It's fine. I'll do whatever you want.
Because I have Starbucks in your fridge.
But seriously, though, you guys are the fucking best. Next week, to wrap it up, we are covering a movie I have seen once. And I loved it, and I am super excited. I might cry on the episode. It's gonna be cool.
And I've seen it a couple times. I honestly got better each time I saw it. They really did.
I'm very excited to watch it again.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a little indie ditty that I am quite excited to cover.
No, me too. It's fucking brutal.
It is brutal. We're talking neo-Nazis and the punk scene.
Brutal and contemporary. That should be enough for you right
yeah,
there.
And yeah, and what I just said should definitely give it away, but absolutely, it's fine.
You made it this far. Thank you.
Yeah, so until next week, guys, if you find a very cool, like, smooth-moving tabby on your commute, leave it be. Mm-hmm. He's on his side quest.
That's right. That's right. And if 1985 Drew Barrymore comes into one of your visions, talk to your doctor. You're not doing good.
No, you're not.
Definitely not.
All right, bye, guys.
See ya.